We're in this Me and My Big Mouth series, and this is the second of four messages. Many of you have been studying the material. It's good stuff, practical, and mostly these first 2 weeks comes from the book of James. We'll branch out after this week, but today we're in the heavy-hitting passage about me and my big mouth in James chapter 3. The children in a prominent family decided to create for their father, for his birthday, a history of the family in book form. They commissioned a professional biographer, paid him big bucks, but then they cautioned him about the black sheep in the family. And all of us have one, and they didn't want it to be an embarrassment on the family legacy, so they warned the biographer about Uncle George, who actually had been executed in an electric chair for murder. And they wanted the biographer to handle this tactfully so it didn't really take away from the family history. So the biographer assured them that he had a way with words, he could handle any situation, and when the book came out, the section about Uncle George read this way. Uncle George occupied a chair of applied electronics at an important government institution. He was attached to his position by the strongest of ties, and his death came as a real shock. Okay, fellas, and I want to see hands, and there were four or five of us in the early service. Have you ever asked a woman when she was due and she wasn't? Hands. Charlie, get it up there. Man, get them up, because they're all over the place. Oh, I'm glad it wasn't just me. All right, Andy, that's good. Listen, I think the average guy does this on average one time, and that's it. And unfortunately, some of us guys are above average. We have those moments. Moments where the words come out of our mouth and they're not coming back. I always thought if God gave us a button, it'd be good to have a pause button. And I used to preach about a pause button, if we could just pause. But actually, I need more. You know what? I need a rewind. That's what I need. And I think that's what you need, too. This is a discussion like the one we're having last week about how important words are. At an early age, I've understood the impact of words. What's the saying we grew up with that I mentioned last week that I think is just baloney? Remember? Sticks and stones. But words, that's a big lie. Let me rewrite it, which I've done for y'all this week. I wanted it on the screen, but that ain't happening. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but bones can soon be mended. Names and words may wound my soul, and the damage is never ended. Words, the power of words. I could ruin my entire career right now with what comes out of my mouth next. Have you thought about that? That's how powerful words are. I could say something right now. I've been your preacher for 12 years now. I've tried to avoid to say things that would make me not be your preacher anymore. But I could say something right now that would totally ruin my career. Next week, the elders would be up here saying, y'all remember Mark? He will not be back. Sorry, but he will not be back. That's the power of words. Words are powerful, and every one of us in here in some way have had our lives shaped by the words spoken to us, spoken over us, or spoken about us. That's why the third chapter of James begins with laser-like focus. James chapter 3, verse 2 says this, we all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. Listen to that phrase again. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect. I'm going to make the assumption that we don't have any perfect women here today. Is that a safe assumption? And I know for a fact we don't have any perfect men here today. We all need to be on the same page with this sermon. I have Mr. Williams, who used to be our mayor in this town, comes to early service. Him and his son-in-law were here last week, but their wives weren't. They were at a flea market in Lawrenceburg. And all week, Mrs. Williams told me today, said all week, all he did was say, Mark preached right at you. Mark preached right at you. To which I said, well, Mr. Williams, you were here, and I heard you say, me and my big mouth. So just in case you all think this is about your wife and her big mouth, or your husband and his big mouth, or your preacher and his big mouth, it's not. It's about you and your big mouth. So we're all going to say the sermon title again until we get it. Me and my big mouth. Say it. Me and my big mouth. Now say it like it's a confession, because it is. Me and my big mouth. I want to attack this today in the same way we would other issues. For instance, I look back on some old sermons, not to get material for today, but just to see how I handled some of these practical things. And I found one on anger, a sermon that I called Anger Management. And I decided from just seeing that I would do tongue management today. Since you can't tame it and you can't totally get a hold of it, then it needs to be managed. So we're going to do tongue management, all right? I'll give you some realities when it comes to tongue management. Number one, if you can discipline your tongue, you can discipline anything. So all of you who have trouble with discipline when it comes to weight loss or exercise or eating better or biblical study or prayer, whatever it is, here's a good place to start. If you can discipline your tongue, you can discipline anything. The average person spends one-fifth of his or her life talking. One-fifth. Some of us are way above average. They say if all our words were put in print, we could fill one 50-page book a day. We're doing a lot of talking. Phyllis Diller died not that long ago. Her husband was once asked, "Do you resent your wife always having the last word?" Listen to what he said. "Actually, I'm delighted when she finally gets to the last word." A lot of activity going on in here. And James addresses this in a way us preachers like because he uses illustrations, especially this preacher. James chapter 3, verses 3 through 8. The preacher's actually going to have to read out of the Bible today, because my words are not on the back wall. So if it's good enough for Peter and Paul, I guess it's good enough for us. James chapter 3, 3 through 8. Check out these illustrations. That's a lot smaller than the words on the back wall are. I can do this. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. So there's two examples right there. A horse and a horse bit and a ship and a rudder. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body but makes great boast. Consider what a great forest. Here's the third illustration. A great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself, the tongue, set on fire by hell. And check this out. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by men. We know that, right? They can make Shamu jump through a hoop. No man can tame the tongue. There it is again. No man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. So here we have these three illustrations, and I was going to show you pictures of a horse and the size, sheer size of a horse, and then the bit that you put in the horse's mouth to control the animal. Small thing, big consequences. Small thing, big consequences. You have a cruise liner, and you have a rudder that's tiny compared to even the bottom part of the ship, and yet small thing, big consequences. You have these forest fires that are raging in California. Probably started with something really small, just a spark or just a little bit of fire, and now it rages throughout the state, and small thing, big consequences. You've seen in families, in our church, how a verbal spark can become a family fire. I've seen through years in ministry how a verbal spark can become a church fire. Doesn't take long for it to get out of hand. You know how this works. At work, the boss calls in Joe and belittles him and upsets him, sends Joe home out of the office. Joe goes home. He's gruff with Susie. Susie's stressed and says something hurtful to their son, Joey. Joey's upset now, walks over to the corner, kicks the dog, Buster. Buster has no idea what's going on, and now he's stressed out, and he goes to the bathroom in the middle of the floor, and now they're all blaming each other for what Buster did. Then Joe and Susie go to a meeting at church at 7 o'clock, but during the meeting, someone says something that isn't intended to be hurtful, but because Joe and Susie are in a tizzy and have been since they left home. Now they fire back with some sharp words, and the whole meeting ends quickly, and people leave the meeting thinking Joe and Susie are whiny church members who have to have their own way. And it all started because he had a bad experience with his boss. Just a spark. And the whole thing goes up in flames. You think a match out of a box can't do damage? Throw one in a hayfield. or throw one near a natural gas leak. Our tongue is like a fire. And if you can discipline it, you can discipline anything. Here's a second thought when it comes to tongue management. The tongue has more power than any other muscle. I thought it'd be cool to see everybody flex. That's how my mind works. So go ahead. Come on. Let me see him. Get him up there. Listen, I have the number to a good gym some of y'all can join, all right? That's not the muscle, though, that I really am interested in. Listen to James 3:5. The tongue is a small part of the body. Again, without the picture, this is going to be ineffective. I was going to show you the picture of someone very small, but you wouldn't want to mess with. He's 5'7". He weighed 140 pounds. His name was Bruce Lee. They called him the Little Dragon. And I don't care who the biggest guy in our church is. I could pick you out right now. And Mitch, you're pretty big. Mitch Fields is back there. I could send you up against the Little Dragon, Bruce Lee. And I love you, brother, but my money's on Bruce. Small thing, big consequences. So this tongue has more power than any other muscle. It's a reality. Let's practice this. Press your tongue firmly against the roof of your mouth. Do it as hard as you can. Do it. Make the face, whatever you got to do, do it. Keep doing it. Do push-ups. Do it. It's a muscle. Now listen, here's what I want to say to you. That's raw muscle. If you were to walk 30,000 steps, your legs are going to be sore. But if you speak 30,000 words, the only thing that will be tired is your brain, because that little muscle right in there never wears out. Doesn't get tired. It's like the Energizer Bunny, baby. Whenever it goes and goes and goes and goes, everything else is quit. It just keeps going. Proverbs 12:18. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. If couples are having trouble, one of the first things counselors want to know is, how are you talking to each other? One way to redeem marriage momentum is to manage our mouths. Men, if you will learn to say one of those three magic word phrases, and I wrote them all down years ago, it can instantly make a situation better. I love you. I was wrong. I am sorry. Please forgive me. If those don't work, then let's eat out. That'll work. Think of all the major damage that's been done by something so small. Rumors, gossip, unkind words spoken in the heat of the moment. Truth to me has always been better than fiction. I grew up in a pretty small, or near a small town, and back in the day, in our local newspaper, they would put surgeries that people were having. That's how small we were. Like Susie May is having heart surgery on Tuesday. It would be in the local paper. Well, we had a lady in Vivi who I grew up to knew as the town gossip, because that's what everybody would say about her. Margie Fleming was her name. Isn't that something to be great to be known for? The town gossip. And she was going to have surgery to have a tumor removed, but there was a typo in the paper. You can't make this stuff up. At least that's what the editor of the paper said. Because the article read that on September 15th, Margie Fleming is having a rumor removed. Isn't that great? Wouldn't it be great if there was rumor removal surgery? Man, sign me up for that. Only you can control what comes out of your mouth. And it's important to understand there's some unique qualities about our words. Here's a for instance, when it comes to the quality of our words. Words are not equally weighted. Don't lose the impact of this point. Words are not equally weighted. 100 people can go out the door and say, hey, great sermon, Mark. Hey, good job today. Hey, good job. 100 people. And then one person says, I didn't like what you said about this. All of a sudden, that one negative comment carries far more weight than 100 comments that should have built me up and pumped me up and made me feel encouraged. How does that happen? And there's something that could be said to me years ago that should have lifted me up for years to come, because it was so encouraging and so positive and so helpful. I think of something my mom said years ago to me. It was so awesome what she said. But you know what? I think back years, I don't often think of that comment. I think of the nasty things that have been said. They don't go away. Why? Because they're not equally weighted. I want them to be. I want every negative to be outweighed by a positive in my life. I do. I strive for that. I try to focus on that. But they are not equally weighted. The source is not equally weighted either. If I don't have a relationship with you and you say something to me that's kind of condemning or preachy at me, and I don't know you, I mean, I may listen and take it for what it's worth, but it won't have near the effect that Charlie saying it to me would have, or somebody that I have a relationship with, because the source is not equally weighted. My daughter, Buzz, is doing some good work for the Lord. She's speaking quite a bit and doing some writing, and she gets encouraged by thousands of people. She would tell you she loves hearing from people, but she needs to hear it from me, because my words as her father weigh more than any of those other folk. I don't really get nervous. I get asked all the time, do you get nervous? I don't remember being nervous, except when I was in a high school musical. It's the only one I ever agreed to be in. I regretted it, even though it went fine, but put me on edge. And it's because I can't dance. Didn't mind the singing, didn't mind the acting, didn't mind memorizing. And they promised to give me a gun belt and boots because it was Oklahoma. That was enticement. And we were behind the stage, and the place was packed. All my church people came. And they didn't usually go to all the high school musicals, but they came and filled the place, and I'm thinking about dance moves. And I'm awkward. I'm just like the tin man without the oil. I just can't. I don't have any rhythm except in my hands. That's it. And so all this going through my head, and then I start thinking, oh, my gosh, if I miss a cue and I don't step the right way, that's going to screw up that whole routine. And these. So I'm starting to think, okay, one goof up by me is going to mess up the whole group. That made me nervous. And I had just had a pizza sub from the pizza shop in Vivi about an hour before we were supposed to go out. I mean, you got to carb up, right, before you do something like this. So I could feel that sub rising up in me. And I kept swallowing real hard, thinking, okay, I can keep this down. And I'm thinking about it. And all of a sudden, it just hit me. And I turned directly to my right, and I hosed the leading lady in the musical, who happened to be my girlfriend. That was the last day she was my girlfriend. The director literally had to go out and tell the audience, we're going to start a little bit late because they had to clean her up. My fault. So my mom comes back. I don't know if it's mother's intuition. She didn't know what was going on. She comes, are you okay? What's going on? I can't stop thinking about these stupid dance moves. And if you have to think about them, then you're not going to do them right because you're supposed to be able to do that without thinking about it. And I can't stop thinking. I'm going to screw everybody up. And she put her hands on my shoulders. One of the greatest quotes of all time came from my mother. She said, honey, you're a fugate. We always mess up. It helped. It actually helped me. I laughed and thought, you know, you're right, we do. Now, had any of you said that to me? Thanks a lot. But that came from Mama. That made a difference. I bet Derek and Doris and Charlie would tell you, working through the years, and Charlie with people, and Jimmy working with people, that sometimes we'll say something to someone, and it's not uncommon for them to say, man, I wish my spouse would tell me that. I wish my kids would tell me that. I wish my parents would tell me. Why is that? Because the source of words is not equally weighted. Words are not equally weighted. The source is not equally weighted. And one last thought with that, the recovery time is not equally weighted. Some of us get over things in a hurry, while others, it lingers on for a long time. I struggle with this because I can pretty much get over things quickly. That's why it's kind of ridiculous when we say, well, I said I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry. The implication is you should stop hurting now and get over it because I said, I'm sorry. Well, I said, I'm sorry. Why aren't you fine now? I said, I'm sorry. Why are you still crying? I said, I'm sorry. Why are you still giving me that hate look? I said, I'm sorry. Listen, if you think that's the way it should work, I've got an experiment I want to try with you. Let me slam your finger in my car door, and I will immediately say I'm sorry, and we'll see if your finger immediately quits hurting. How about that? Well, I said I'm sorry. Listen, words can hurt, and more words don't immediately make things better because the recovery time is different for all of us. So words don't weigh the same. The source is not the same, doesn't weigh the same, and recovery time's not the same. Jesus said, out of the mouth, what comes out of the mouth is a reflection of what's in the heart, Matthew 12. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good man brings good things out of the good heart, good stored up in him. The evil man brings evil out of the evil stored up in him. So from the heart, the mouth speaks. To interpret what Jesus said, and just to put it plainly, which it is, if you are always talking angrily, you have an angry heart. That's what he's teaching. If you are speaking kindly, often, it's because you have a kind heart. The way we would say this at home is, what's down in the well comes up in the bucket. The words you use have a lot to say about who you are. And then here's the last tongue management thought that I want to share. Your tongue reveals who you really are, James 3:5. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Man, is that a vivid picture. Think about our history. When Richard Nixon lied about Watergate, and when Bill Clinton lied about Monica Lewinsky, they set our country on fire. We were consumed with figuring out, well, what's true and what isn't true and who's taking sides and you believe them and I don't believe them and accusing those not on their side. You know what that is? That's a form of verbal arson. You know what verbal arsonists do? They're people who always use inflammatory words. We could have been poster children for that Stephen King movie. Remember that movie called Firestarter? That little girl who could just start. We start fires all the time because our tongues are out of control. Don't know if I told you about my cousin Verdell. Jimmy Johnson made me think of this. Verdell walked into an insurance office and said, I'd like to buy some fire insurance. And the agent said, I'm sorry. He said, we're all sold out of fire insurance, but I'll sell you some flood insurance. To which Verdell said, well, that won't do me any good. I don't know how to start a flood. And we know how to start a fire, don't we? I get a picture from my brother Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Our garage burnt down to the ground. Get this, 3 cars. A brand new tractor that was just purchased 2 weeks ago. 3 four-wheelers. And years of tools collected. All to the ground. Cars are nothing but frames now. Mom and Dad and Mike and Cammie, my brother and sister-in-law, were having supper. Heard a series of explosions. The garage sets about 50 yards from the house. And it just boom, boom. And they go out and just watch it all go up. Fire marshal came, and the official report says cause of fire undetermined. That's helpful. So we don't know. And I've told you before, here's another example, that my mom and my dad, I've never seen them worried, anxious, upset about anything in my entire life. And so my mom's first comment was, as they're watching the fire, to tell my older brother, text Mark and tell him weenie roast at the house he's invited. And as my dad's standing there talking to a fireman, doing his evangelistic thing, he says, well, Bible says it's all going to burn up anyway. I guess we're getting started early. That's my folks. Didn't miss a beat. Don't know what started it, but we're pretty sure probably something small. Something a little bit hot that got a little bit hotter, that got something else hotter, something small. And if you'd have seen the pictures he sent me, I didn't recognize where it was. Didn't know. The damage done, the big time damage done by something so small. It's eye opening. We know how to start fires, don't we? the damage they can do to a marriage, to a home, to a government, to a church, the damage they can do to a soul. If we can't tame this beast, then how do we guard against the damage that it can do? Well, Paul says in Philippians chapter 4, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. And had he went on to say more, he probably would have said, think about these things and then talk about these things. Tongue management. If you can discipline your tongue, you can discipline anything. The tongue has more power than any other muscle, and the tongue reveals who you really are. And then James concludes by hitting us right between the eyes in James chapter 3 and verse 9. I should have this one memorized. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. In other words, you're speaking out of both sides of your mouth. So I want to say this before we close, because this is an important part of the lesson. You don't get to make the claim that you love God and have me believe you when you mistreat people that God loves. You hear me? You don't get to make the claim that you love God and be believable if I then have to watch you mistreat the people that God loves. And James is not the only one to make that point. Two books later, John says the same thing. Whoever does not love his brother or sister whom they have seen, they're right in front of you, cannot love God whom they have not seen. Let that thought sink in for a minute. Whoever does not love his brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. I'll bring that home with my 2-year-old granddaughter, Navy Ann. Her mom made her call me and make a confession to me the other night. It's been a few weeks ago. They've been talking about how Jesus is everywhere, and she's asking questions. Like, well, if he's everywhere, why don't I see him? And she even said at supper one night, why isn't Jesus here? And she keeps asking her mom, why isn't Jesus here? And so one night at supper, her mom's talking to her about Jesus, and my 2-year-old granddaughter says, I don't trust Jesus. And said it with attitude. Well, I don't trust Jesus. 2 years old. You all need to pray for my little atheist. Because it about made me fall off the couch when she said it. Now, I know we got time to work with her, and I think everything's going to be all right. But you know what? She brings up a valid point. Because John said, if you can't love the people you see, Navy trusts the people she sees. She just doesn't trust Jesus yet because he ain't seen him. She's going to work through that. Again, pray for her. I'll tell you that every chance I get. Pray for her. But she's making the same point John is. If you can't love the people you see, then don't claim to love the God you can't see. Speak out of both sides of your mouth. Then James concludes in chapter 3 with verse 10. We'll read this and then we'll wrap it up. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. This should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can salt spring produce fresh water. Now, as a preacher, and I have been for 42 years now, what amazes me about this, and it's something I think if you watch the videos that Andy Stanley did, he pointed it out too, but I've seen this for years. Most of the time when a Bible writer will address a subject that we're having trouble with, he'll not only preach to you about it and like, you're struggling with this, then he'll give you a how to fix it verse or two. Here's what you do about it. Not James. He just dumps it on you and then moves on to another subject. He just says, you're not going to tame it. You're speaking out of both sides of your mouth. You're setting the world on fire. And then he moves on. How come no instruction about how to fix this? How to get control of this? How to manage this? I think that shows just how untamable it really is. Can we do better? Absolutely. We're right back to where we started. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. I don't know if you're familiar with Casey Stengel. Some of you fellows will be. He coached the Yankees and the Mets back in the day. I had a good picture of Casey Stengel. He had a unique way with the English language. I never could understand what he was saying. For instance, here's a Casey Stengel quote. Check this out. I've always heard that it couldn't be done, but sometimes it don't always work. Anybody have any idea what that means? I've always heard it couldn't be done, but sometimes it don't work. Don't always work. He was put on a board of directors at a California bank, and in the Wall Street Journal, Coach Casey Stengel described his duties on the bank board. Check this out. Ain't nothing to it. You go into a fancy meeting room and you just sit there and never open your yap. And as long as you don't say nothing, they don't know whether you're smart or dumb. Well, he confirms what the Bible says in Proverbs 17. Even a fool is thought wise if he keeps silent, and discerning if he holds his tongue. Why do you think there's so much instruction to not speak in the Bible? It's because no man can tame the tongue. I met a nice couple years and years ago. Kind of remind me of Raymond and Reva back there. They had been married for 60-some years, and we were doing a marriage seminar in the church. And I asked them to come up, and I had two stools for them. They didn't know it. I said, you all are going to tell us how this works, because you guys are awesome. And they took questions from the audience, which was tremendous. And someone asked Ben, I called him Benny, why he was always calling Sarah little pet names like Honey Pot and Sugar Dumpling and Darling and Sweet Cheeks. And I loved his answer. He said, it's because I forgot her name 20 years ago. Good answer. He said every day since they got married, they've been married 60-some years, he told himself every morning, today you say something nice to Sarah. And for over 60 years, he never missed a day. I did Sarah's funeral. I watched Benny put a note in the casket into Sarah's hand, and I asked him later if he'd tell me what it said, and if he didn't want to, that was fine. He said, I'll do better than that. I'll show you. I made a copy at home. So we went to his house, and he pulled the note out, and here's what Ben put in Sarah's hand. My sweet Sarah, you and I have always heard how beautiful heaven must be. Well, it just became even more beautiful the day you walked through the gates. You know what he was doing? Same thing he had done every day for 60 years. He decided even that day he was going to say something nice to Sarah. You can use your mouth to tear someone down. It doesn't take much. You can use your mouth to build them up. That doesn't take much either. It'll be a constant struggle because no man can tame the tongue. The poet wrote, I watched them tearing a building down, a gang of men in a busy town. With a ho-heave-ho and a busy yell, they swung a beam and a side wall fell. I asked the foreman, are these men skilled, the kind you would hire if you were going to build? He laughed and said, why, no, indeed. Just a common person is all I need. They can easily wreck in a day or two what's taken builder after builder years to do. So I said to myself as I went on my way, what part in life do I want to play? Am I shaping my words to a well-made plan, patiently doing the best that I can? Or am I a wrecker who walks around and with my big mouth tears everything down? I want to be a builder, not a wrecker. How about you? Amen.